Okay, welcome back, gentlemen, to another session of the Thursday evening Musa Shir. And this is the number 15 of the series of the CDs. And we're doing Orchos Tzadikim, of course, and it's number Shir number 3 of the Orchos Tzadikim. And we are on page Gimel, Daf Gimel, and we were discussing last time the five senses that a person has and how the thoughts and our decisions are developed, and the advantages or possible advantages and disadvantages of some of the senses. For example, we ended off the last paragraph by saying a blind person, although it is a terrible disadvantage in many ways, of course, but there is one advantage that a blind man will not have as much of an opportunity to be a bal gaiva, a haughty person, as a person who has his eyesight. So what do we do about this? That's the next paragraph. The Orchos Tzadikim is not going to address, now that we know where our thoughts are developed from, the five senses, what do we do about it? Lachain, top of the page, Lachain kol ha'odam ha'nilvav. Every man of heart, therefore every man of heart, yishtadel b'chol kocho, should strive with all of his might, lahagia la'tachlis ha'shayucha lahagia, should to reach the ultimate that he is able to reach, ulahasig min ha'malas, and to attain the qualities, the different levels of qualities. Well, let's pause there for a sec. Well, let's continue to the end of the sentence. And this is an incredible line here. He says a person should not make use of any of the five senses and or his traits. Only that which will result in either chesed, kindness, or good deeds. That means all the five senses, hearing and eyesight and listening and touch and smell, and all these five senses should not be used unless we know in advance that the result of these actions that we're using these five senses for is going to be either chesed, kindness, or ma'asim tovim, good deeds, which is an awesome responsibility, of course. That means we have to make a cheshbon, you have to calculate before we do anything, where we're going to say something, the power of speech, of course, or we're going to look at something, we're going to feel something, whatever it is, we have to think in advance. Will the result of my action now end up being chesed and ma'asim tovim? But I just want to focus for a moment on something that the Orchos Tzadikim said on the first line here. You notice that he said right there on the first line, yishtadel b'chol kocho, a person should strive with all of his might. He didn't just say yishtadel, he should strive. He said b'chol kocho. B'chol kocho means with all of his might. You know, Shlomo HaMelech is known to have said, t'vakshena ka'kesef, if a person wants to know how to serve Hashem properly, seek it out like money. Now, when it comes to money, people don't let one stone unturned. If, whether it means getting up early in the morning or going to bed late at night or working and schwitzing and you know what it means to make money. You make money, you do whatever it takes. So that's Shlomo HaMelech who said, im tvakshena kakesev, if you seek out Hashem like you seek out money, then oz tovin yiras Hashem, then we will understand what it means to serve Hashem. Sometimes people say that they're doing the best they can and they don't really mean it. I discussed this with my Rebbe, my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Hanoch Leibowitz, who said something very interesting. He said, often people end their day and they think to themselves, at least they're advanced enough to think to themselves, they're sensitive enough, to say, okay, I did the best I can to serve Hashem today. Now, what does it mean they did the best they can? He said, when you feel that, because my question to him was, what does doing the best you can really mean? So this is what he said. When you reach the point at night, when you're putting your head on your bed, and you say, I did the best I can, do a little bit more. And he said, explain. He said, because if you don't do a little more, then your actions tomorrow are going to be just a repeat performance of today. But if you add on a bit more, you're exhausted, it's 12 midnight, you've worked like a dog the entire day, or you learned to the best of your ability, do a drop more. because then tomorrow you will be starting from the extra bit that you added on. And if you do that every single day, then, and only then is there growth. I heard something similar that proves that brings the point across very nicely. I heard this from Rabbi Joseph Grumblatt. Rabbi Joseph Grumblatt, who is now the Rav Emeritus, actually, the Queen's Jewish Center in New York City, a very chashuv Talmud Chacham. And Rabbi Grumblatt said that often... So he said something interesting. He said that often when a person is working at a job, they say, if they're there for 10 years, they say they have 10 years experience. The truth of the matter is, he said, if the person has been doing the same thing over and over for 10 years, he doesn't have 10 years experience. He has 1 year experience 10 times. Now that's very different than having 10 years experience. So the point is the same. When it comes to growth in terms of Bechol Kocho, the Aruch HaTzadikim is saying with all of our might, that means when we reach a point in a day that we feel, wow, we've made the ultimate dedication and striving and we've put all of our guts into it to perfect our midos, our character, try a bit more, so that tomorrow we'll be starting from that bit more. So let's continue from there. V'zeo, about four lines down, the paragraph, v'zeo tachlis hatova, and this is the ultimate good if we operate in this manner. She'im, higia odom l'mala tova, once a person reaches a good level in his striving for character perfection, li'olam yachmod la'alos el'malo shi l'malo mizos hamala, he should desire then to reach an even higher level that he just reached. Actually, again, in other words, he shouldn't rest on his laurels and just relax and sort of say to himself, okay, I've reached this, that's it, I'm comfortable the way I am. No, you have to reach higher. Achi agia l'tachlis hatova, until we reach the ultimate good, uvazeh yagia l'olam hagamul, in which case we'll be able to attain and reach the world of reward. What is the world of reward? She'u ben olam haba, which is the world of Olam Haba, because that is the real reward. And we may have discussed this around this table once before, that the real reward, as he says, is the world to come. That's the reward. Basically, there are no real rewards in this world. I forget the Chazal offhand right now, but basically, what the advantages that Hashem gives us and any quote-unquote rewards Hashem gives us in this world is not in terms of payment or reward for what we've done to serve Him. It's an opportunity to serve Him more. Because sometimes people look back and they say, ah, I have my good health, so I must have done the right thing for Hashem, He gave me my good health. That's not really what it is. Hashem is giving us a good health, so He's basically giving us the message, okay, now you have your good health, serve me more, serve me, continue to serve me. If a person is blessed with a nice financial package, then it's not a reward for what he's done in the past. It's an opportunity and a test and a challenge. Hashem says, okay, here you go, another couple of bucks. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to use it properly? But never should a person think that what he is achieving or getting in this world materially is a reward for something he's done, because there are no rewards in it. The only real reward is the world. Now, if you're wondering why this is, why are there no rewards in this world? It's simple. I'll give you a mashal. Imagine this for a moment. You're walking down the street and you see children playing ball, and you have a 5-year-old child. The ball goes out into the middle of the street, and the child runs out to get the ball and doesn't notice that a car is racing down the street 35, 40 miles an hour. And you're standing there, you see it happen. In the nick of time, you grab the child, take him out of the way of the car, and you save the child's life. The mother, meanwhile, of the child, is looking through her window of her house, and she sees this happening. As it's happening, she's watching. And she sees a child dart out into the street, she sees the car coming, and she begins to panic. There's nothing, she's too far away, she can't. And then she sees that you save her child just in time. And after that, she runs down the steps, and she comes over to you, and she says, you saved my child's life. Please, come into my kitchen, take any cookie from the cookie jar you like. That's ludicrous, ridiculous. You're going to give me a cookie for saving your child's life? So she says, you're right. Take two cookies. Two cookies. Noch besser. Two cookies. You're right. You know what? You can have the entire cookie jar. There's nothing that this woman can do for us, that the mom can do, that could be payment, reward for saving a child's life. You can't replace the child. How are you going to compensate for that? You can't. The most she can do is just say thank you and express appreciation. Whatever she's going to do for you is going to be perhaps a token maybe a token, but is there anything you do? That's the same thing it is in this world vis-a-vis our relationship with Hashem. Hashem views us serving Him on such an incredibly high level and such mesiras nefesh and such commitment that what is He going to give us as reward? You put tefillah on today, so I'm going to give you $1,000 in the bank? That means $1,000 as payment, as reward for putting on tefillin? Do you know how much putting on tefillin is worth to me, Hashem says? There's nothing in the world that's valuable enough. In this world, there's nothing valuable enough that can be a reward for putting on tefillin. It's impossible. I can only reserve that for the world to come. If I'm going to put $1,000 more in your bank account, that's for another reason. I'm giving you an opportunity to serve me more, to serve me better, to find another angle that you can serve me that you haven't done beforehand. And this is what he means here when he says, "Bozei agia l'olam hagamul," because following this recipe, so to speak, is the manner in which a person will reach the olam, the world of gamul, of reward, shehu ben olam haba, which is the olam haba, of course. Oh, yes. Incidentally, the phrase I was looking for was Schar Bahai Al-Maleka. Reward in this world doesn't exist. So let's continue from there. Ukva Nisava David Lahagia El Tuv Olam Abba. We have a wonderful role model here, gentlemen. David HaMelech longed to reach the good of Olam Haba, the world to come. Ba'amro, when he said the following words, how good is that goodness that you have hidden away for those who fear you? In other words, it's something which is so delicious, which is something good that Hashem had to put it in hiding. You know, when you find something around the house, you want to reserve it. You buy some special food on Tuesday, but you want to keep it for Shabbos. But you want to make sure no one gets a hold of it beforehand. So you find a corner in the cupboard somewhere, and you hide it behind the cereal, so to speak. Why? Because you don't want it to be spent, to be used before the special time, special occasion. So imagine how special this reward must be that David HaMelech is describing it. Heshet Sofanta, that you hid it away, you put it into hiding for those people who fear you. V'yamar, and furthermore, he says, they will enjoy the fatness of your house, and they will drink the rivers from the rivers of the pleasures. And it's interesting, by the way, because the Radak on this pasuk points out that it's going to be the kind of goodness which is not followed by bad, and it's going to be a situation where there will be no hunger. And it's very interesting insight from the Radak, because often in life, even when we are enjoying the quote-unquote good times, you never know what can follow. Somehow there's something that bad that comes afterwards. Is there any guarantee? So the Radak explains that what David HaMelech means to say, that the reward that is awaiting us in the world to come is going to be good, and it will be good, and it will continue to be good, and it will never cease to be good. There won't be any bad that follows it. Okay, let's continue. But this level can only be attained by those people who are worthy of it. Like it says in the pasuk, also in Tehillim, Miyagur Bo'olecha, who will live in your tent, Miyishkom Baharkachecha, who will dwell in the mountain of your holiness, Holech Tamim Upoel Tzedek, this is a person who goes through life with innocence, Tamim, what you see is what you get, Upoel Tzedek, and acts with righteousness, and the rest of the issue that is discussed there, which incidentally I looked up, and I found that the end of the pasuk says, "Vidover emes bilvovo," he fulfills even the thoughts of his heart. What is the kind of person who is the reward in the world to come is waiting for him? This is not only the person who keeps his physical word. In other words, you say something and you fulfill your words. You make a promise to someone, you give your word, and you hold to your word. This is talking about a person who not only keeps his word that he verbalized, but he keeps the thoughts of his mind. In other words, a person who intends to do something, and in his mind, wow, that's like a promise, like a vow, and he keeps it. These are the kind of people who are considered, the Poel Tzedek, the people who go through life with righteousness. Now, yes, so the question is being raised for something we mentioned earlier, that the person should strive and do the best he can and even add after he's wiped out at the end of the day? Is it all right? Is it permissible to take some time out to relax? There's a concept called bitulahi kiyuma. Wasting time is fulfilling time. That means, for example, if a person would not take out time during the day to breathe because he's too busy serving Hashem, then he's not going to serve Hashem too long because he's going to die. He's going to drop dead, obviously, right? If a person doesn't take the time out to eat, right, then he's not going to be able to survive to serve Hashem either. So what we mean, anything that's...
I love Lucy.
Yeah, it's true. So anything, a person has to make an honest to goodness, sincere assessment of his time schedule, and he has to be honest with himself, say, what are my needs and what are my wants? What is necessary for me to be able to function like a normal human being? That's paramount. Because if a person doesn't function normally, then there is a serious danger to his emotional stability, and what good is it going to be for him? You won't be able to serve Hashem any further. So when we say a person must try b'chol kocho with all of his might, that means under normal circumstances, a person drives, there are people, unfortunately, who take this the wrong way, and drive themselves literally to the grave in service to Hashem, and they're doing it l'shem shamayim. You know, the term l'shem shamayim is always an easy term, that means for the sake of heaven. Of course, it's very religious people, you know, and sort of like keep up with the Joneses religiously or spiritually. A person has to know when is the time to take off, to sit back and to relax. And that's extremely important. The hashkafa, the philosophy is that if a person is out to do the right thing, then he's going to end up doing the right thing. He needs siyata deshmaya, of course, but if he seeks advice from the right kind of people, and he is sincere and honest, you know, and he will be. If we leave it up to ourselves, sometimes we are blinded. Let's face it, we do have personal bias. I'll give you an example. You know, take a look. I may have shown this to some people at a previous time. There's a here, I carry it along in my Musa Sefer. There's an advertisement here. Look what it says, gentlemen. Read this carefully, all right? You haven't lived until you've cruised. Now, I tell you the same, when I saw this, I looked at my wife and I said, I must be dead. Because I haven't been on a cruise yet. And it says very here, clearly here, black and white, you haven't lived until you've cruised. Now, gentlemen, they're paying big bucks for, advertising agencies to create, and print these ads. It works. It works. When people read these, they're selling cruise tickets for cruise lines. There's no doubt about it. So that means the Yetzer Hara, this is just a form of the Yetzer Hara. That doesn't mean anybody should tell you ever not to go on a cruise. If you feel that it is necessary for your mental stability and for relaxation to go on a cruise, then go on a cruise. Of course you should go on a cruise. But when you come up with an advertisement, you haven't lived until you've cruised, that gives you the impression that, buddy, if you haven't been on a cruise, wow, you're missing the boat. Excuse the pun. Okay, we continue with Vekivan Sheiskarno, the next paragraph. Vekivan Sheiskarno Yisrael Malas HaAdam. Now that we have discussed and made mention of how superior a human being is, Roy Lanu Levoer, it is worthy of us now to explain Chashivuso, his nobility, Ugenuso, and his lowness, that means a human being's nobility and lowness, Tovoso, the goodness of a person, Veraso, and the evil of a person. Ad sheyiyeh lefnei hamaskil derech yosha sheyovo sheyochol lahagiyah lachatzar hamelech hagadol. Until we have to clarify it so much so that it becomes clear to the intellectual person the proper path in life to lead in order to attain and reach the chatzar, what he refers to as the chatzar melech hagadol, the courtyard of God. Ki tivchar nafsho b'chol kocha, because that person will choose with all of his strength, mikol mida umida hatov v'habar, every character trait that which is the most select, v'yizro kapsoles, he will toss out the waste, v'yikach hasoles, and he will take the soles, the fine flour. Basically, the waste here is referring to the undesirable traits. And the soles, the fine flour, means the desirable traits. In other words, once it becomes clear to us what is good and what is not good, because often people don't do the right thing or do the wrong thing because it's unclear to them what is right and what is wrong. So the first step we have to do is what's right and what's wrong. Imagine a person needs for a health condition, has to follow a particular diet. So the doctor says, all right, go ahead, start the diet. What's the diet? In order to get back on my feet, and for it to be used as a remedy, I have to know what's quote unquote good for me and what's quote unquote bad for me. If I don't know what's good and what's bad, I'll eat potato chips for the next 3 weeks of my life and thinking that that's fine, and then I find that it's no good. So in order for a person to reach the level that he's perfecting his character, he has to know which are the traits which are considered desirable and which are the traits that are considered undesirable. And we're going to find out that it's not only black and white, desirable and undesirable. We're going to find out that even within the desirable, there are some undesirable. And even within the undesirable, there's some desirable. And we're also going to find out, it depends on the time and the place. You may have to take advantage to use certain desirable or even undesirable traits, dependent upon the situation. So this is what this is the route that we're taking in order to perfect our character. Now, the next paragraph is something very interesting. He's going to describe to us different kinds of people, because there is no such thing in character development, in Tikkun HaMidos, there's no concept as generic. People are not generic. There are different kinds of people in the world. Now, just like the doctor cannot give the same diet to every person, so there are different diets depending upon what kind of person you are also. Now, the person has to understand what he's all about in order to make sure that he's taking the right diet. So here is a description of different kinds of people. Now, gentlemen, as we go through this, let's try to imagine there's a mirror in front of us, and we're trying to decipher which one of these is the perfect description of us. Everyone, remember, we only point a finger at ourselves. We never point a finger at anybody else. And by the way, yes, this is where it gets a little difficult. By the way, it could be that we are a combination of a few of these character traits. Okay, so let's take a look at what he says. Yesh Adam, there are people in the world, Shehu Bal Chema Vakois Tamit, very wrathful people, and they constantly get angry. They lose their temper. That's one kind of person. V'yesh Adam, there are other kinds of people. Shadatam Yusheva Salav, extremely calm and cool, relaxed. V'eino Kois Kalal, hardly ever gets angry. V'im Yichas, and if at times he does get angry, Yichas Pakas Ma'at Bekamashonim, every few years, he sort of loses it a little bit, but he is like, otherwise, really a calm person. That's the second kind of person. Here's the third kind. V'yesh Adam Shehu Gval Lev Yoser. Here's a person who is extremely haughty. V'yesh Hu Shval Beruach Yoser. You have another kind of person who is extremely humble. V'yesh Hu Bal Taiva. You have people who are extremely lustful. A person with a lot of passions. Can't control himself. Lo sispa nafsho me'aloch b'taiva. Kind of person, Orach HaTzadikim says, he cannot satiate himself. The more passions, the more desires, the more lust, the better. V'yeish, on the other hand, you have shehu tahor lev mod, you have a person who is so pure at heart. V'lo yisava, let's turn the page, afilu ledevorim u'atim, shaguf tzor alchem. He doesn't even take advantage of those items in life that are really necessary. In other words, he is so low on the taiva scale, on this desire scale, that when he can walk by a Viennese table and be hungry, and he won't even take a snippet. Because he has no desires. No desires. You have those kinds of people. I have yet to meet one of these kinds of guys, but he says that's the kind of person there are. V'yeish bal nefesh rechava. There are people who have expansive hearts. Lo sispa nafsho mikol mamash v'olam. The more money, they can never be satisfied with it. You give them a million, and he's 2 million, 3 million, 4 million. Kiyin shenema, like it says in Koheles, again, Shlomo HaMelech speaking this time, and it said, he says, famous pasuk, Oev kesev, lo yispa kesev. A person who develops a love for money will never be satiated for money. He'll never be satisfied with money, because he has the love for the money. Once he has a love for money, So what, are you going to give him a million? And once he has the million, he still loves money. If he loves money, so what's a million going to do? He needs 2 million. And he gets 2 million, he's 3 million. So since the love is for the money, he'll never be satisfied. Interesting, by the way. And a few weeks ago when we read in the Torah that Avraham Avinu had died, it says, Vayomos Avram died, Zokain Visaveya. He was a Zokain, an elderly person, Visaveya, and satisfied. Avram Avinu was a multimillionaire. It doesn't say Zokain Va'ashir, that he died an old man and a wealth and a rich man. It doesn't say that. Because Avram Avinu was actually a multimillionaire, but he was happy with that multimillion dollars. He didn't need even more than that. And if he would have had just 1 million, he would have been happy with that also. So that's why the Torah testifies about Avraham Avinu that he was saveya. He was satisfied. And then we're going to have to get into the whole issue, of course, one of these days later on as we go through the Sefer, about Eizo Ashi Asameach Bechelka. Who was the real wealthy person? Who was the rich person, I should say? The person who was happy with his portion. Okay, so we're going to have to discuss that also. But basically, Oev Kesev Lo Yispa Kesev, a person who loves money, he'll never be satisfied with money. Gentlemen, I'm just going to pause for a second and give you an incident. I witnessed this myself years ago. I took my children, my family down to the boat show. You know, Miami Beach, by the Fountain Blue Hotel, they have the boat show, annual boat show. So I wanted to say, I wasn't going to buy a boat, don't get nervous. I was just going to look at the boats. You can go in the boats and out of the boats, and it's, you know, have a nice time there. So I was looking on these boats, hundreds of boats, and wondering to myself, does anybody, gorgeous boats, expensive boats, anybody actually buy these boats? So I went over to one of the agents, and I asked him, I said, sir, does anybody ever buy these boats? So he reaches into his pocket, and he takes out a check for $7 million. And he points at a boat and he says, you see that boat over there? A half hour ago, somebody just bought that. But now, gentlemen, think of this for a second. If it's a $7 million, I never saw so much money in my life at one time. You know, but you imagine how much he must have. He's not, obviously, he's not spending his last penny on a boat. That means, first of all, he's got $7 million in a bank to cover the check. And he's not spending his last penny. So you imagine how many oodles of dollars the guy must have if he's putting down $7 million for the boat. So when I saw it, I said to the agent, I said, wow, what a boat. The guy must have been thrilled. He must have walked away a happy man. He says to me, no, the guy was miserable. I said, miserable? The guy's buying a boat like this miserable. I'm going to be miserable. He said, I'll tell you why. Because what he really wanted was that boat over there, and he pointed to a different boat. Whoa. And that boat is $16 million. And in front of me, he took out his book, his ledger, and he was going through his accounts, I guess, to see how much he can spring for that morning. And he was only able to come up with $7 million, and he couldn't do the 16. He really wanted the 17, the 15. What was it? The sixteen million dollar boat. No. So you hear a guy who was in love with a boat, he's not going to be satisfied. So he walked away with this. He walked away. You know, whatever. He sailed away with this $6 million, $7 million boat. But he's still not happy. He wants a $15, $16 million boat. Incidentally, by the way, gentlemen, while I was talking to this agent, to me it was like a $7 million boat, a $15 million, $16 million boat. I said, what's the difference? Can you tell me, what's the difference between that boat and the less expensive boat? He says, if you take a look at them, basically they're the same size. And they're really basically the same boat. But you know what makes that $15, $16 million? He says, the toilet flusher is made out of 14-karat gold. And the doorknobs and the faucets for the sinks are made out of 14-karat gold. That's what makes that boat $16 million to $15 million. No, gentlemen, if a person is... Now, again, never point a finger. If a person's used to gold toilet flushers, then, hey, you know what I mean? I don't know. That's the way the ball bounces. I don't know. Let's continue. V'yesh katzar nefesh, and you have a person who is very constrictive. Shaddai lo afilu b'dava muat. He is happy with even the minutest of things. Lo yirdov lahasik kol tzorcho. He doesn't even pursue that which he needs. V'yeshu misagev atzmo barov. There are people who have personalities that they don't eat. They afflict themselves with fasting, with hunger. And goes begging around and doesn't eat one morsel of food from his own unless he's forced up against the wall. He has no choice. On the other hand, you have people who squander their money, just wasteful. They don't really need their items. They just throw it out. And he says, you have many different character traits along these lines, and he gives us examples quickly. Kagon, for example, Maholo, you have people who are cheerful personalities. Vionain, people who have depressing, they're depressed always. Kila, you have people who are stingy. Vashoa, you have people who are generous. Achzori, you have people who are cruel. Rachamon, you have people who are merciful. Rachleva, you have people who are cowards. Viamitzlev, people who have courage. Vachol kiyotze bohem, and all similar kinds of traits. So this is just what he refers to as a short list of different character traits. So we have to examine ourselves, where do we fit into this picture? By the way, it doesn't mean necessarily, for example, when he said there are people who are a balkas, an angry person, doesn't mean the kind of guy who gets angry all the time. But if we have a leaning in that direction, then he was talking to us. If you're that kind of person that has a leaning towards losing your cool, then we have to find the recipe for dealing with that character trait. You're not going to use the same recipe for the guy who's cool as a moose, for the guy who loses his cool, right? So that's why it's so important to understand, the different character traits. We continue, gentlemen, with the next paragraph. Where do these traits come from? Very important, gentlemen, that at the same time that we're working which character trait we are, it's important to know the origin. Where do our characters come from? V'chol ha-deos, he says, yesh bahem deos shehu la'odam mitchilas b'riyasa l'pitev ha-gufo. There are certain character traits that a person has by nature from birth. He is born a nice guy. He is born patient. He is born. This is the kind of character he came into the world with. There are other kinds of people that their character is inclined in a certain direction and could more easily adopt that kind of trait more than other traits. In other words, he wasn't necessarily born with it, but he has a leaning in that direction. The third one, there are those kinds of traits that absolutely where the person was not born with and doesn't have a leaning towards it. Ella, and this is extremely important, particularly for youngsters, but even for the older generation. Ella lamad osam me'acherim. He simply learned it from other people. And this is extremely important because, particularly with youngsters, most of the influence of a youngster these days is not the parents and not the teachers, is the people they hang around with. Peer pressure. People, the power of influence is incredible. A few weeks ago, again, we learned when the Torah enumerated the incident of Rivka, when Eliezer is meeting Rivka, it says that Rivka was Achos Lavan, and it says where she came from, that she came from, she's from Padan Aron. So Rashi says, why does the Torah have to repeat who she is and where she's from? We already know it from a previous pasuk in the Torah. So Rashi explains, and it's an incredible lesson here, to teach us to give praise to Rivka, that although she was brought up in an environment where her father was Besuel, a lowlife, and her brother was a lowlife Lavan, and she came from South Beach, from a place of lowlifes, Padan Aron, still she maintained she was able to rise above it and not be influenced by the environment that she was brought up, which is an incredible degree of praiseworthiness. And that's what he means here, that it could be that there are certain character traits that we have that because of the influence of the people that we are surrounded with, teach us certain character traits. And this is extremely important. It's very, very careful. We once mentioned here the word for friend. For friend in Lashon HaKodesh is chaver. If you take the word chaver, you can unscramble the letters ches, beis, reish, three other ways. Chaver is bachar, choose, or it could be a cherev, a sword, and it could be barach, run away. And there's a beautiful lesson there, that if the keep company you keep are true friends, then bochar, choose them for your company. If they are destructive, a cherev, if they are a sword, if they are destructive for you, barach, run away from them. So the power of influence is extremely important. Let's continue. Oshapono lehem miatzmo lefi machshava sholso belibo. There are certain character traits that we have simply because we develop them on our own thought process. Oh, or sheshama, we heard shezoz hadea tovelo ubaroy leilech, that it's a good idea to adopt this kind of character, and it's a good idea to go through life with this kind of trait. Vehinigatzmo ba, and we habituated ourselves in this trait at shenikba belibo, until it has become embedded within our hearts. So now we know the origin from where our character developed from. And hopefully, now that we can decipher what kind of person we are and where it comes from, perhaps we'll be able to find out next week how to use the character traits properly. Have a wonderful evening. Yeah, sure.